Welcome back to The Deeper You Dive. As promised, today's episode will focus on a brief analysis of a song not on East. And if you couldn't tell from the title of this episode, that song will be Colleen. Colleen was released as the first track on the 2007 EP, Joanna Newsom and the E Street Band, with the title of the EP being a humorous nod to Bruce Springsteen and the E Street Band. This EP was recorded over the span of 3 days as Joanna was on tour for East. I chose this song to preface our analysis of our record because some of the symbolism and themes present in the song feature throughout East, and I think this song serves as a good introduction to anyone unfamiliar with Joanna's work, specifically the importance of identity and femininity in Joanna's music. One last thing before we get into the song. This analysis will be brief compared to the analysis provided for the tracks off of East. If you're a huge Joanna fan, much of this analysis you may have known prior. If that's the case, I urge you not to be discouraged by this and continue to listen to this season. The breakdowns for the 5 tracks of East go to such detail that I think any level of fan can learn something from those episodes, so just don't judge a book by its cover. Alright, let's dive in. The initial lines of the song immediately present us with some sort of irony. Our narrator begins to tell us a story, but admits that she is regurgitating how the story was told to her. This touches on the inaccuracy of so much of our history that was passed down from one person to the next. What was lost, what is remembered, and from whose perspective? We also see a lack of conviction in these words. They're passive and concede immediately to how the story was told to her, not how she herself understands the story. The next lines continue with this form of storytelling as our narrator tells us that she must have once been a thief or a whore. We see that the story told to her is her own story of where she came from. The fact that she has to be told this indicates a forgetfulness from our narrator, but more interesting is what the people tell her of her background. Thieves and whores are looked down upon in society. They're dirty and downright wrong in their eyes. By providing the narrator with this story, the people can be assured that she will not desire to go back to that life. She cannot remember what she once was, but by telling her that she was these things that are looked down upon, she is stripped of any power, now willing to accept anything that isn't that previous life of debauchery in the eyes of society. Pick me up and toss me around. I lost my shoes and tore my fine gown. Forgot my name. She is told that she came from the sea. The sea, as opposed to land, is unstructured. Water is a free-flowing liquid that is only bound by the borders of its container, and the ocean's container is seemingly boundless, accounting for 70% of the surface of Earth. This presents to us the idea of structured versus unstructured. Confinement versus liberation will be prevalent throughout the rest of this song. We note how these people describe the sea nastily. They paint the water to be not a kind or accepting place, and in its roughness, it caused her to be stripped of her clothes and even forget her own name. The people tell her she was clothed and shoed, particularly that she was in a gown, which is historically a feminine article of clothing. And the fact that they assume she must have been clothed and worn shoes comments on their narrow worldview. As opposed to the rough and unkind sea, those that find her washed ashore are oh so kind to take her in and shoe her feet. Upon making her look decent, they begin to teach her the laws of the land. She is immediately taught prayers for chastity. In other words, she is taught not to have sex prior to marriage. This comment directly relates to the vast majority of civilizations and religions in the world where it is a sin to have intercourse prior to marriage. This could also be interpreted as a comment on what women specifically are taught in society, how it is a shame for them to have sex before marriage, whereas it seems to not be relevant at all for men. It's important here that the one thing they teach her is abstinence, a limitation placed upon her. Teaching her all that she needs to know to fit into this society, they give her a name, Colleen. Colleen sounds an awful lot like the Gaelic word for girl, which I believe is pronounced Kayleen, C-A-I-L-I-N. This short, bland, quite obviously belittling name that is given to her comments on how women are viewed in this society. Just that, they are women. They are viewed as though they are all the same and are stripped of their own identity to fit how this patriarchal society operates. Our narrator is told that she is blessed among all women to have forgotten everything because it will make her assimilation easier. In forgetting her own identity, she can better fit into how society wants to shape her. The language here closely mimics the Virgin Mary's Annunciation. Blessed are you among women, and blessed is the fruit of your womb. While Mary's blessing enables her to produce life, we will see that our narrator's blessing will do the exact opposite.
And as the weeks and months in tried to make myself of use, did the plant if I could not produce, not root nor leaf nor flower nor bean nor. It seemed I overwatered everything, and I hate the sight of that empty air, like stepping for a missing stair and falling forth forever blind.
As time passes, our narrator tries to do her best to fit into society. She tells us that she tilled and planted but could not produce. To till is to cultivate land for crops, and we see how, despite her best efforts, she is unable to grow anything. There's a couple ways to interpret this. The land here could be her own body, and her inability to produce could be representative of the limitations placed upon her by the civilization. If we take the verse at face value, our narrator tries to participate and do the work of the land, but she's not cut out for it. The fact that she overwaters everything ties us back to her previous home, the ocean. Unconsciously, our narrator's past still has a presence within her, a desire to fill the structured land with limitless water. This is furthered in her distaste for the empty air. A sea creature thinks of water the same way we think of air. They inhale it for oxygen. The actual air on land appears empty to our narrator because she is meant for the sea. She is meant to be in the water where their oxygen comes from a tangible liquid, not the barren air of land. She relates this feeling to that of stepping for a missing stair and falling. The fact that she is so awkward and uncomfortable on her earthly feet reinforces the idea that she is meant for the sea. She is quite literally a fish out of water. The sense of tumbling out of control is how our narrator feels about her current situation. She continues this life despite how horrible it feels to her, and she seems powerless to change it.
I dream some nights of a funny sea, a soft as a newly born baby cries for me so pitifully, and I die from a child of the wild in me, and then so sweetly the airy sea. But last night came a different dream, a gray and sloping shoulder thing said, what's cinched round your waist?
Our narrator then tells us that she often dreams of a funny sea, and the adjective funny here displays her forgetfulness of her previous home. The water appears funny to her because she can't imagine why she would dream of the ocean, and yet her dreaming of the sea taps into her subconscious desire to return. The sea appears to call to her like a child calling for their mother, and in her dreams, she dives into the water where she is so sweetly received. This past night, though, the dream changes. Our narrator details a dream in which a whale comes to visit her, but she does not know it's a whale. Rather, she describes it as a gray-shouldered thing. To cinch is to secure something with a belt, and baleen is the straw-like teeth from a baleen whale that it uses to filter out water when it takes in a large mouthful of fish and other sea creatures. This reference to baleen could symbolize how our very own narrator experiences a similar filtering, how she is linguistically filtered and can only express herself within the confines of the language of her new society, one where whales are strange beasts. This baleen is said to belong to the whale, so the wearing of this baleen could symbolize our narrator adopting to the way in which the land civilization views these creatures of the sea, as if they are theirs to hunt and use as resources. Regardless of symbolic meaning, the whale is astonished to see our narrator donning its baleen around her waist, and scolds her for betraying where she came from by asking if she has forgotten everything. This inability to recognize a being that she once coincided with indicates the slipping away of our narrator's identity. Notably, the word cinched relates to the waist and paints the image of a corset, an article of clothing that tightens and restrains the women who wear it. Corsets were common in the past where women, even more so than now, were seen as lesser than men in the eyes of society, so it isn't far-fetched to imagine that our narrator is made to wear a corset within this story. We also note the symbolism of the corset itself, constraining and restricting women's abdomen just as patriarchal society has limited and repressed women throughout the ages.
This morning on the Cape at dawn, some travelers sailed into town. Scraps for sale and the saddest songs in the book of pictures where they're bound. It's your way. Well, the task of me along. Well, I asked the men who showed it me, what is the name of that strange beast? He said its name translated.
Our narrator tells us that some sailors come to town carrying with them loads of art, from songs to photographs. She sees one of these pictures that shows a whale with a tusk a meter long. Confused, she asks the sailor what the name of this beast is, and we do note that the word beast continues the distance from her and the sea creatures. The sailor tells her that the name of the creature is He Who Easily Can Curve Himself Against the Sky, and upon hearing this, our narrator is dumbstruck. This name stems from the old Inuit name for narwhal. The Inuit legend of how the narwhal came to be tells of a woman thrown overboard into the roaring sea. The ocean tosses her around, so much so that her hair spirals into what becomes the tusk of a narwhal. We can understand now why this name affected our narrator so. Remember that she was told she herself was thrown into the sea. This name directly contrasts the name given to her. It is lengthy and expansive, not short and constrained like hers. We also note this defining moment of a particular theme present throughout this song, the power of names. Names carry weight because they represent someone in their entirety. In that one word is the whole soul of a person. Perhaps the most famous example of the power of names occurs in Harry Potter, where they do not dare speak the name of Lord Voldemort aloud. In our story, we remember how the people of the land tell our narrator that the sea caused her to forget her name, and in turn, her entire identity. They then provide her with a name, one that is rigid, limiting, and dismissive of identity altogether. Yet, upon hearing the name of this magnificent sea creature, our narrator is left speechless. Seeing what has occurred, the sailor points out the confused look on her face, knowing that something has stirred in her. In parentheses, likely meaning implied but not said aloud, Joanna sings, "The light is in your eyes, Colleen," displaying how hope is not yet lost for her.
You dare to speak a lady's name? He says, "My lady is my first name." I would not speak a name in this place, and if I were to try, then the wind I swear would rise. How dare you claim for me without a trace? Have you come then to rescue me? He laughed and said, "From what, Colleen? You dried and dressed most willingly. You cosseted and cut the
Following the bridge, our narrator is still in shock and has not yet realized what she soon will. She reverts back to her identity of the land, surprised that someone would use her name to her face, a lady's name. The sailor tells her that he would not dare, and the use of "my lady" is almost certainly ironic here. He says, "I would not speak your name in this place, and if I were to try, then the wind, I swear, would rise to tear you clean from me without a trace." The fact that the sailor wouldn't use her true name for fear of how nature would react reinforces the idea of the power of names and identity. The actual name of our narrator carries such weight that he cannot speak it, indicating the true power of our narrator that is being suppressed by the laws of this land. Sensing her liberation, our narrator asks if the sailor is here to rescue her. We pause to note the significance here. Our narrator has become so indoctrinated to the laws of the land that she deems herself utterly powerless to the situation. The patriarchal society displays men as the powerful ones, so it is relevant that she asks a man to rescue her. The man laughs in amusement and points out how she assimilated to this life quite willingly, that she corseted and caught this dread disease herself, implying that she is free to leave whenever she wants. The forgetting of one's true identity that was described as a blessing in the beginning has now been compared to a disease she has willingly caught. Our narrator then recognizes that this is true. She was all too willing to adopt the laws of this land and forget where she once came from. Upon realizing this, she declares that she doesn't know any goddamn Colleen, signifying her rejection of the identity placed upon her by society. In typical Joanna fashion, we don't get a neat and tidy story. Rather, the ending is purposefully ambiguous. Our narrator returns to the sea from where she came, a return to the free-flowing, chaotic, and unshackled life. She enacts the dream she had of the sea. She returns where she is embraced with the gift of being herself. She then describes our bodies as artifacts of some strange dream, touching on the bold arrow of time that leaves our moments here as mere memories that are half forgotten, poorly remembered. The forgetfulness at the end of the song presents us with a contrast, and I think this post on allthebirds.tumblr.com summed it up better than I could. Quote, "For me, the ambiguous ending of the song expresses both the problematic nature of forgetting and the tensions of living with the knowledge of both existences. Which existence do you forget? Which memories do you allow to become artifacts that will slowly decay and be forgotten? And once you've experienced another way of being, how do you separate the parts of yourself that have become entangled with it? How do you avoid splitting yourself in order to exist as a whole, complete and uncompromising self?" End quote. In one sense, liberated from the constraints placed upon her within society. But our narrator, like many of us, still finds herself troubled by the nature of life itself. For more content like this last verse, see Joanna's 2015 album, Divers. Conclusions. Colleen details the story of a sea creature whom is forced to assimilate to society on land until she finds the strength within herself to return to the boundless sea from whence she came. As I noted at the beginning of this episode, this analysis is brief compared to what we can expect in the coming episodes. There are plenty of things in the song that I didn't cover. I mean, I skipped a whole stanza towards the end. This analysis has been rather straightforward. I've really only proposed one possible interpretation for most of the lyrics here. I can assure you these oversights will not be shared in my proper analysis of Ys. The purpose of this episode was to get us comfortable with two things. One, the importance of identity and femininity in Joanna's work, and two, the symbolization of water in Joanna's work. The story of Colleen represents that of a young woman growing up. The fact that she forgets where she came from could symbolize our youth. When we're young, we don't think about who we are, we just are. Upon growing up, we are handed responsibilities, just as the narrator was clothed and shooed. The monotonous tasks she attempts to perform on land resemble the monotonous jobs we are told we must do to operate within the bounds of society. More importantly, the name she is given is representative of the role of women in patriarchal society. In this short and confined name, Joanna captures the limitations placed upon women throughout the ages, as well as the forced femininity still placed upon women today. Her eventual rejection of this name, the declaration that she doesn't know any goddamn Colleen, is an exclamation of rebellion against the life laid before her. She returns to the sea, to the world where she can be herself, unbounded by the laws of society, and asks us all to follow her. Colleen is not only significant in how it empowers women to reject the confines of society at large, but also in how it symbolizes water. Here, water represents freedom, a limitless and powerful place where our narrator desires to reside. Throughout our analysis of Ys, we will see how Joanna continues to use water, but often to symbolize something much, much different. That concludes today's episode. Make sure to tune in next week where we dive into the first track of Ys, titled Emily.